Okay, we'll now take up item 13, presentation as to Sarah's pre-retirement workshop.
So we thought that we would provide the board a glimpse of what occurs at a pre-retirement workshop with our members. Pre-retirement workshops are meant for folks that are within 5 years of retirement. We've been doing informational sessions onsite at employers last year, and we're going to start doing onsite informational sessions this year at Cicera for those that are further out than 5 years from retirement. So we didn't put these materials in your packet because we wanted you to have kind of a fresh glance at them, just like our members do. At our next board meeting, we are going to be going a little bit more into the retirement application process, what's necessary, who's responsible for what, some of the timing around different stages in that process. So we thought it would be helpful to have kind of an overall broad discussion on, you know, and reminders of, okay, these are the benefits that we have, and this is the information that we provide our members. And some of you are also members, so enjoy. Tim?
Yeah, okay, before Breanne comes up, we run 11 of these workshops per year on site here. As part of the presentation, we also invite representatives from C-Ray and RSG to come in and speak to the audience and provide an overview of what they provide, the benefits they provide, the role they play, how they differ from one another. We also have MassMutual come in and discuss the 457 plan and what to be thinking about retirement, you know, when you get to retirement, and it could be from the time you're paid, making withdrawals, annual withdrawals, required minimum distributions, and so forth. They talk about consolidating benefits and kind of one-stop shopping. At the end of the session, we bring a representative in from county benefits, and they go through the retiree healthcare benefits. There are a lot of different rules. As Gail mentioned, we target 5 years and out. County benefits is basically more interested in 1 year and closer as far as enrolling in benefits, because it's very critical that if the person is not enrolled in benefits at the time that they retire, they can't get into benefits. They also talk about if you drop out of benefits at any time when you're a retiree, you can't get back into the benefits. And let's see. Well, at the end of the session, all of the retirement counselors come in, as well as the disability specialists are available, and that's to provide one-on-one counseling, support, questions to the group. We normally have about 20 to 25 attendees. A lot of them bring guests. They have a lot of unique questions for their situation, so we provide that one-on-one time with them. They also have the opportunity to call the office and schedule an individual appointment at any time. You've been provided with a folder. This is very similar to what our attendees receive. The one difference is to make it simple, as Bree goes through the presentation, the estimated retirement calculation that you were provided, you all have the same one. When this is prepared for our audience, the attendees that come in, we're preparing normally two to three estimates per attendee. And so it's pretty laborsome to do all of the calculations and prepare them, but each one has their unique calculation to see where they stand as far as retirement and the information they provided to us in their request. Now I'm gonna have Bree come up, and she's gonna walk through the presentation with you. Bree actually is one of our senior counselors. She does make the presentation probably for about, what, the last year or so she's been doing it. And so I'll turn it over to Bree.
Okay. Good morning, you guys. My name is Breanne. I am one of the retirement counselors here. I do the pre-retirement workshops, and I also do the off-site presentations as well. So you do have the slideshow in there as well. You can follow along if you want to. But this is what we go through with our members to get them prepared for what to expect when retiring, and really going into how we calculate their pension so they have a better understanding of what goes into their calculation. The first thing is our workshop agenda. This is what we go over through all of our workshops with them. It's the eligibility and vesting, how the benefit is calculated, their options when they retire, and then the final preparation that's needed for retirement.
This was someone's idea.
So the first thing is eligibility investing. We do break this out based on legacy and PEPRA members, but vesting itself is for all peers, no matter if they're legacy or PEPRA. It's 5 years of full-time service credit to be vested in our system. For part-time, you do have to work the equivalent to get to 5 years. So if you're working a 2040 schedule, that's 10 years of service credit, 10 years of employment to get to 5 years of service credit. And like I said, this is for all tiers, whether you're PEPRA or legacy with our system. So. Eligibility to retire. If you're a legacy member, it's age 50 with 10 years of service or more. You can retire age 70 or older, no matter how many years of service, and at any age you can retire if you have 30 years of service. For safety members only, they can retire with 20 years of service, no matter what age they are. Under the new PEPRA guidelines, if they are a PEPRA member, the eligibility for general members is age 52 with 5 years of service or more, or age 70 regardless of the service, and for safety members it's age 50 with 5 years of service, or age 70, no matter how much service they have. Part-time employees, we do have an eligibility to retire that's a little bit different. So if they are part-time at the time of retirement, they can retire age 55 as long as they have 5 years of service credit and at least 10 years of employment. They do have to be part-time when they retire. You can't be part-time, go full-time, but because you have part-time, you can retire. So you do have to be part-time at the time of retirement, and then this eligibility would be established for you as well.
With a part-time employee, do you calculate it based on their part-time salary, or do you calculate it based on if they had a full-time salary?
So their salary amount that we use is the full-time equivalency. Their service credit is the part-time service credit based on
hours. Got it. Thank you.
So our benefit calculation is a defined benefit plan. We do base our calculations off of three pieces, and I'll go through each of those pieces with you guys today. It's the retirement age factor, your final average monthly salary, and your years of retirement service credit. We times those three by each other, and we get the pension benefit.
That's under the presumption that the final average is greater than your 12 best contiguous months,
correct,
right?
We are always looking for the highest 12 months or the highest 36 months.
Pre-PEPRA, and then post-PEPRA is 3 years.
Right? Yes. And we'll go through that in our monthly salary. So the age factors do differ from tier. For general members, the factors increase every 3 months of through the age of 63. If you were in membership prior to 1-103, they actually increase to age 65. For safety members, they increase every 3 months through the age of 50, and this is for legacy members. For PEPRA calculations, the PEPRA general tiers increase every 3 months through the age of 67, and for safety, they increase every 3 months through the age of 57. In the folders, we also give a sheet on how to calculate your own pension, and it gives the factors based on what tier they're in, so we do break it out based on each member. For this one, since we used a safety one, we did put the safety calculation sheet in there. So this is our sheet. You guys all have the color coordinated sheet in front of you, but anything to do with the age and how we calculate it is in pink. So up at the very top, we have the date of birth for the members, always in pink, so that I can tell them, you know, this is where we calculate your date of birth with your retirement date to get your age that we're gonna be using. The age factors are then put into the top right hand corner. For this member, it is a safety member and it's 50, so it's 3%. And then we push that down into our calculation, and it's the first piece to the puzzle of what we do to calculate the pension. So the final average salary for members, for tiers 1, 3, and safety A, we use the highest 12 months consecutive base pay and pensionable differentials. We can also use one vacation sale if it's if they're eligible to make a vacation sale. For tier 2 and safety C, we use the highest 36 months of consecutive base salary and pensionable differentials, and up to 3 vacation sales if they've made vacation sales in that time period.
Come back with that, up to 3 vacation sales if eligible?
Yes.
And they will. Oh, that's right, because you've got 3 years, 36 months.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
For PEPRA, all tiers, we use the 3-year average base salary. No differentials are included and no vacation sales, so it's calculated on their base pay only. Pension enhancements, this is causing excess compensation at the end of your career, can be deemed an enhancement and it can be excluded from the pension calculation. We do have a policy on this that is on our website, but we do review all differentials and earnings that the members make to make sure that it wasn't something that would be deemed as an enhancement to their pension.
It's thanks to us, huh?
So the biggest piece to our calculation is the salary. That's what usually has the most part of what goes into our calculations. Everything in blue has to do with the salary. So we always break their base salary up from the differentials if they have differentials. So in this case, the base salary will always be at the top, and you'll see there will be 12 months or 36 months if they had tier two time. Then we also list out any differentials and how much they've earned of that in the 1 year or 3 year calculation. We also break out the vacation sales. So if you've made a vacation sale, we will include it there, and we break it out so that you can see that. And then that gets us down to our final average salary for 1 year and 3 years. That's the second piece to the puzzle of calculating the pension. And then that then goes down in the bottom part to get to the second piece to calculating the pension. So the third piece is retirement eligible service credit. The basic service credit that people receive is your month of service credit for every month that you work. You work one full month, you get 1 month of service credit. That adds up as you're working throughout your career to get you to be eligible to retire. There are other service credit that you can have included in your pension. Some are purchases and some are other things that we just include. The first thing would be purchases of leave of absences, time prior to membership, or redeposits. So these are all three purchases that members can make that make them eligible to retire sooner. So they can add this to their normal service credit and it can get them to their 10 years, 20 years, whatever they need to retire and be eligible to retire. The leave of absence is any medical leave of absence that they have had during their career that was medical for themselves and they were out and did not make a contribution. Once they come back to work, they can then make that purchase and make their account whole again. The second one is time prior to membership.
When they come back, do they pay their share or do they pay employer and employee share?
They pay their share plus interest. The time prior to membership is what we refer to as a pickup. It's any time prior to the membership that they have been working in the county. Generally, we get this a lot with nurses and things like that, where they're per diem or part-time hourly. They can buy that time once they come into membership, and it adds years of service to their pension.
I had a question for you. It's actually about two slides prior. I'm processing a little slow today. In terms of your review of an application to mm-hmm. determine whether there are either inappropriate enhancements or other things that shouldn't be used in the final average salary calc, is that done on an individual case-by-case basis, or is that application flagged for you? In other words, does the system recognize that a threshold of benefit is reached and flags it for you, or is that something that a counselor does?
A counselor does that. We do all of our calculations manually, so we do that and we look at it as we're doing.
Okay. Thank you.
The last purchase that you can make is a redeposit. So if you ever worked for the county or one of the districts, and then you left and took your refund because you didn't think you were going to come back to work for the county at any time, once you come back to work, you can redeposit that. So we do look at how much you refunded and the interest to bring it current, and that is something the members have the option to do as well.
Wow. Bree, before we leave the time, mm-hmm. are there time cards? Quite how do you determine when somebody's full-time, part-time? Let's say they're at 35 hours or 32 or 28. How are those hours reported, and how do you capture them, and how are you confident that they're
so
accurate?
It depends on who their employer is. The county is a little bit easier just because we use PeopleSoft and we have access to PeopleSoft, so we can see how they're being paid. We can see the paychecks.
Central Sand's real difficult, though, right?
No. Very complicated.
They're all full-time over there.
Hey, that is actually, that's actually true. We are all full-time.
So PeopleSoft has screens that show us what hours they're currently classified as. We also can see their retirement contributions they make every month, so we can see what the salary is that's being calculated. Most other districts give us paper forms that certify to us what they're being calculated at. So we get paper files over also every month that gets reconciled in our member services department, and we reconcile that they're working the hours that they've certified to us. So, and then that's what we use to calculate their service credit and their salary. So.
Okay. You commented a moment ago on Petra. Are you getting Petra retirements at this point?
Yes, Petra, yeah.
Petra is a beautiful place to go to in Jordan. Amazing weather. So am I. It's fabulous.
We have gotten some Petra retirements.
Tough room.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Not as many as Petra. So the other service credit purchases that we do have is a public service. So if somebody ever had military service, worked for another agency throughout the state of California that they may not be eligible for a pension with, we can look at giving them a cost of what that would cost to buy that time with our service, with our system. Conversions, we still do some conversions. They're not as popular as they used to be, but people that had tier two time can convert that into tier three time, and we can work up that cost to give them benefit of what it would be to move that time to tier three.
But you can't move someone from PEPRA into any of those tiers.
No.
Okay. It's
just
only,
no.
It's only, the only conversions we do is tier two to three, and used to do some, I think, tier two to safety. So, community property share is the last service purchase that people can make. If you were ever married during your time with Cicera and then were divorced and the ex-spouse got part of that time, if they take a refund of contributions on that time that they receive, then the member has the ability to redeposit that time. Hmm. For a period of 5 years from the date that we send them the letter, they can redeposit that.
So somebody that's divorced early on and their wife gets at the, say the first 5 years they were married, mm-hmm. and then he or she stays for 30 years and they retire, they can buy those, they can supplement those first 5 years that the wife gets half of?
If the wife took a refund of them, they would have to do it prior to retirement. So we always encourage people as soon as they get a divorce, if they are going to have to split, that they give us that documentation right away. We do see it a couple times a year where they wait till they
can retire. Can they get to their full retirement? Can they get to 100% of what they should, what they would have been getting if they didn't have the divorce in the...
If the ex-spouse refunds,
yes.
Then they could... to redeposit.
I didn't know that.
But so what you're saying, refunds, in essence, say if they get a 50-50 share, they could go and say, the present value, I want half of what's sitting there right now, and take that cash out, and then pay the tax consequences or reinvest it or something else. And so then the member would have to re-contribute
to make that amount
whole.
Yes.
So if the ex-spouse chooses to take their portion and draw it as a monthly benefit, then they don't get to
right.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand.
Yeah, see, it's sort of like if you were to say, I don't want my retirement anymore, just give me the cash I put in whatever I'm entitled to. And so in a divorce, if you get a 30-70 split of your spouse's retirement, the spouse who gets a 30, who's not the member, might say, hey, you know what, I want that $75,000 right now because I'm a really good stockbroker. I'm going to, you know, invest the money and I'll make more money that way. So then they could pull out that 30%, get a lump sum, which is just the 30% of what's sitting in the account right then. And then the member could
that part I got.
It has to be within 5 years of when the money was withdrawn. Is that what you're
that
saying?
Yeah, when we notify the member that they can.
But if they choose to take it on a monthly
right.
Then basis, then they can't do the...
No, they can't do it.
That's... Okay.
Yeah.
The reason I had somebody that got into that situation, they took the monthly...
That person
was totally bitter for years.
The last part of service credit that we include is unused sick time. So whatever sick time you have on the books at the time of retirement, we do convert to service credit. For general members, it's 2,000 hours. We take whatever you have, divide it by 2,000, and that gives us your service credit. 2,000 is our 1 year accrual rate. For safety members that are 56-hour employees, we use the number of 2912. So we just use that, divide whatever's on the books, and that's additional service credit that gets added into their benefit. We do break that out on our worksheets for members so that they can see how much sick time they have on the books and how much it's adding to their pension, so they can do the determination if they want to leave that on the books or not. The way that people can make purchases, we do have a couple different options. The first one is a lump sum. Anyone can come in and give us a check, a cashier's check, to write to buy the purchase, and we will take it, give them a receipt. The other way is a post-tax payment contract, so we can set up contracts with the employers to have it come out post-tax from the paycheck every month for whatever amount of months that they want to do that for. And the last one is the 457 trustee-to-trustee transfer, so we can use Mass Mutual funds or whoever the 457 account is that the district uses to roll money over pre-tax into our system.
Yeah. So it's after tax.
A couple
it's
forms,
not pre-tax.
And then it gets rolled over into Mass Mutual. In Mass Mutual's case, they send us a check, and then we send the member a receipt saying that we've received the money.
But that's only if they're eligible for a credit purchase, right?
For the purchase?
That's if they're eligible.
You can't take all of your money in the 457.
No. So this is just ways to buy those purchases that I refer to.
Yeah.
Bree, what are the tax implications of those forms of payment?
So pre-tax comes over pre-tax, so they're not paying any taxes on that at this time.
Well,
so you pay taxes on your pension
when you
retire. So that would be that. But if you do a lump sum and you pay from your own checking account, then you're writing the check to us for that. Once you do retire, we do let you know what contributions were paid post-tax. So.
And then when they eventually pull a benefit, it's yeah. noted.
So they have a basis then equal yeah. to the lump sum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
So service credit is everything in orange. So generally if somebody during our workshop has already made a purchase of some kind, we always list that up in the top so that they can see that we are including the purchases that they think they've already made and certifying them that they have. Over on the right-hand side, we always list their service credit for their service. We always put the dates so that they can see what date of membership we're using to the current date of retirement that we're doing the estimate for. And then it totals all of the service credit for them. That is then put over here into the third piece of calculating their pension. The bottom line also says sick leave, so you'll see that that's where we point out how much of their sick leave is adding to their pension.
And in the workshop, members actually receive an estimate with their own numbers filled out.
Their own numbers, yeah.
Yeah. So everything is based on their current salary, their service credit, what hours they're working. We don't project out on service on sick leave. We always use what's currently on the books. So the benefit option choices when you retire. All of our estimates that we give members are based on the unmodified. That's the most to the member. If they are married, then it would leave a 60% continuance to their spouse, qualifying spouse, or a minor child up to the age of 22 if they have no spouse. We do also give out other options that they can choose from. The options 1 through 4, they will not always be listed for every member on every situation, depending on if they're married, how many kids they have. Different scenarios will determine what options they're given at retirement. The option 1 is a lump sum payout to a
Sorry, one last question on a prayer point. Is there a definition of school students, of hours, anything like that? If they're taking one class in underwater basket weaving?
I don't handle that.
Generally, you're looking for a full-time student.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. How do you...
Well, credit.
Yeah, so...
Depending if they're on a quarter system, semester system.
Would it help to define that? Say, 12 units or more, or full-time credit, or something like that. In school, it could be a PE course,
No, at the time, if they are getting the benefit and they have to certify it to us,
that's right.
At least annually or every 6 months.
Okay.
So the option 1 is a lump sum payout to the beneficiary rather than a monthly continuance. The option 2 is a 100% continuance to the beneficiary. Option three is a 50% continuance to the beneficiary, and the option four allows up to 100% continuance for multiple beneficiaries. So depending on who the member's beneficiary is at the time of retirement, we adjust the options that are given to them based on their individual scenario. They also get the death, what we call the death benefit. It's the $5,000 death benefit if we are their last employer when they passed, when they retire. And we do verify that there is an insurable interest in who they're naming as their beneficiary, that they're related by blood or law or financially dependent on the person that's retiring. So.
What happens if they're not? It's a good friend, for example.
I've never had someone in my 10 years here that hasn't had some sort of insurable interest. I've never had somebody with somebody that's the neighbor down the street or something like that.
So, quick question. My wife is my beneficiary, but if she dies first and then I die, mm-hmm. are my children eligible for that $5,000?
Yes. So what I tell members, one of the things with the options, the unmodified option, you can always change your beneficiary. The other options, depending on which option you choose, the option two, three, or four, you cannot change your beneficiary. So if something were to happen to your wife after you had retired and you had the unmodified, you could then change your beneficiary to somebody else. They may not be eligible for a monthly continuance, but if there happened to be money left,
so that's new. All right, so I need to.
But then they would be eligible for the $5,000 death benefit.
Got you.
So this is the tax exclusion amount. Any contributions that were paid into our system prior to January 1st of 1990 and any post-tax purchases that were made throughout a member's career are considered are post-tax, and therefore they are excluded based on the IRS tax regulations. We do put that in the letter that we send to the member when they retire and let them know how much they have in post-tax contributions.
Another question about definition. It says current IRS tax rules. Does that mean at the time you retire?
Changes are broken down when you look at the rules.
I'm just asking about
yes,
the,
yeah,
if there's an evergreen nature to this presentation, when, define current. That's what I'm concerned about.
Right. For example, the method we're following right now is the current basis recovery method. And it's a revised, simplified payment method, and it's for benefits that started after 12/31/1997.
Right. I'm just asking whether or not it might help to say, based on IRS tax rules at the time you retire. Isn't that accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Because the other end said there are little windows for other methods. That
okay.
So final preparation for retirement. You always want to make sure that you're getting counseling leading up to your retirement. That may be just a pre-retirement workshop. You've got all your questions answered and you don't need anything else answered. We always take phone calls with the active counselors. You can call us and ask us questions, or if you want to come in on a one-on-one basis, we can bring you in for an appointment and go over any new estimates, or the date has changed, we can update stuff for you. You do want to file the retirement application. It can't be accepted any earlier than 60 days prior to the date of retirement, and it has to be in our office prior to your date of retirement. We also need documents along with that. So when we do send out the application to retire, there is a checklist that goes over what else is needed as well with the retirement application. And we go through all that with the members at the time when they're calling in asking to retire, and then also there's a slide that goes through what else is needed as well. The health and dental benefits for county is still handled through the county. So health benefits does handle that. We give the number and the email address to the members anytime that they ask for it. We don't give direction on anything to do with health benefits because we are not aware. We also direct them to contact their human resources department if they are with the district instead of the county. We also do have, during this presentation, Craig Taylor here who helps answer questions about health benefits for the county as well. So. Normal retirement age, this is something that is certified on our application to us from the member. It states that if you're under 50 years old and your last year before retirement was safety, or if you are under the age of 55 and your last year before retirement was general, then you have to certify these things to us. That you do not have a pre-arrangement for employment, with your employer to be reemployed after retirement, and that you understand that you cannot be reemployed for at least 90 days from the effective date of your retirement, and this is considered the bona fide separation. So they do have to mark those boxes for us on their application at the time of retirement.
With respect to that,
uh-huh.
You have retirees who come back and work as temps, basically. And so that's something different than this.
So they can't have it prearranged prior to retirement.
Right, but then they have to wait, I think, six months now.
Otherwise, the Board of Supervisors.
Then we have to, and we do grant those exceptions when it's a critical employee, but we don't love to have it happen if it's something prearranged and just sort of a financial benefit to the employee.
We really
want it to be a situation where they're retiring, they haven't been able to train someone new, or they couldn't find someone new, and then we will have a board order.
And it could take 6 months to get on the agenda, so you might as well wait the 6 months.
Gotta have it in 10 days and more.
Yeah, thousands of items on those agendas.
You've certainly improved your chances.
Anna does a good job getting things
in. So these are the documents that we do need in addition to our application packet. We need birth certificates or passports for any member and their beneficiaries that are listed. We need Social Security cards. We can take a front page of a tax return in lieu of a Social Security card if they absolutely don't have one, for the member and any beneficiaries listed. We also need marriage certificates for the marriages and divorce documents if they've ever been divorced during the membership. If the member's spouse has passed away, then we usually ask for a copy of the death certificate to show that as well. If they have Tier 2 time, we also need an estimate from Social Security on what they'll get from Social Security at the time of eligibility for that.
In working for the county, oftentimes benefits office or HR has like marriage certificates and so forth. Are you able to accept copies from the county offices?
If the members went and got copies of them from them, then we could take those. We don't have to see the originals. But we can't reach out to the county and get copies of them.
Okay.
So the county won't share that information with us. Yeah.
Well, and could you explain a little more about what the Social Security estimate, how that applies in the Tier 2?
So for Tier 2, the way that that tier was created, it takes a reduction for Social Security into it. So we do have to put the amount that they're going to get from Social Security into the estimate, and it takes a reduction in their Tier 2 for that. It's not as great as what they're getting for Social Security, but it is built into how the
into a formula. Okay.
And we also put on the checklist a way for them to get that estimate online so they don't have to go down to the Social Security building and wait. That can be time consuming. The death during active membership form. So in our...
it's your lucky day.
You can skip this slide.
You're going to be here for a while. Yeah, let me get my notes out.
With our members. If they already have one on file, we do print it out so that they can see that they have it on file and make sure that it is still what they want. If they don't have one on file, then we do put a blank one in the folder for them to complete if they want to. So this is something that we do go over with them at every pre-retirement workshop. It is something that we think that they need to be informed on to decide if they want to have it on file or not. It is there for their benefit. We tell them that if they want to have it on file so that they can have this in place if something were to happen to them while they're still actively working and pass away while they're still working, this is a benefit that we have for them, and we do have the form that they can fill out and turn in. We go over, they have to fill out option 2 or option 4 based on if they have one beneficiary or multiple beneficiaries. It is something that we do go over with members every day. So I tell them that if they want it on file, this is what we do. They have to, have their beneficiary at the time. If of their passing, we would go through the whole process of getting their medical documents. It's something that goes to the board to be approved. If it's not approved, then they would get the refund of contributions. But it is an added benefit that we do have for our members. So
as an active, you're married, you put your spouse as your your spouse passes away later. You get married again later. Can you then do this same form, as long as you're still an active person, can you do this form for your new spouse?
Yes. So the way that this form is designed now, you don't list a name. The old form used to have the beneficiary's name listed on it. This one is just now to where you choose option two or option four. But I do get them, since I deal with the divorces as well, where, you know, they want to make sure, you know, what's going to happen if their ex-spouse was on their account and now they have their children listed, or a new spouse in some cases, you know. So it's whoever their beneficiary is listed at the time of death. But we do go through this with them. If it's not approved, then they would get the refund of contributions or whatever they're eligible for at that time.
I just had a question. Uh-huh. You obviously heard the prior discussion, yeah. At least I think you did. Are there any interactions that you're aware of where members actually ask about whether and to what extent this benefit might or might not happen under given circumstances? I'm thinking not, but I don't know.
I mean, it's not a matter of having conversations on if they'll get approved or if they won't. We don't have that kind of conversation. But I do go through with my members on the benefits of having or not having it. For every member, it may not be something that they want on file. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're older and their spouse is older, they may want right. them to get a lump sum of contributions because right. that would be worth more than a monthly benefit for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. But I make sure that they're well informed of what the options are, because this is a benefit for our members that can benefit them if they were younger and their spouse needed the income to survive.
And there are some instances where this would not generate the highest amount for them. So it's important that, you know, they go over that
right.
with them.
So this is our disclaimer that we put on all presentations that we do. It just goes over that we do follow the laws of the 1937 Act. And now the PEPR guidelines, they can change at any time, as we've seen. They do change. So this is what's in place at this time as we're doing this presentation. We also provide them with a survey, ask them to provide any feedback that they have on the presentation, anything they would like to see in the future. We've also provided you a copy of that survey in their suitcase to do it. And then we open up for questions to them as well.
Do you keep a record of who attends
yes.
your sessions?
We have a spreadsheet that we keep of everybody that attends, just because right now we're booked out until October for our pre-retirement workshop, so
wow.
it's an ongoing thing. So wow. we do have the spreadsheets that we keep with all their information and what they request.
Yes. And what about the survey results? I would love to see them. I mean, it would be helpful for us to see. I had very positive feedback from one of my staff members who attended one of your workshops a couple of months ago. She came back glowing, just saying it was so helpful and informative. But it would be helpful. I think we as a board might want to see some of your survey results for attendees last year.
We're going to cover that at the next.
Oh, are you? Okay.
I think they're going over that.
Oh, good. Okay.
You'll get to see how they rate.
This is kind of a precursor.
Okay. No, no, no. I just thought, as long as you're telling us that you've done a survey, I'd love to know what people think.
Yeah, no, they keep track of all of them, and I think they're
going to
give you that information.
Okay. Terrific.
But just overall, they've been very favorable. There's been a couple of helpful comments here and there, but overall, they've been favorable. You like that?
Helpful comments, but in general, they're favorable. Euphemistically
more
speaking.
More helpful comments, favorable.
Smoothing the waters.
Anything for Bree?
No. Good job.
Except it was
Thank
very
you.
Good. Thank you very much.
But they do actually, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek. But they do sometimes say, oh, it'd be good if you had this, or what if you did this, or, I mean, they are helpful. And then there are some that are, you know, helpful.
And so including that in the information package has helped.
Yeah.
Some of the negative comments that we've had was with the construction going on,
yeah.
which you have all experienced. You know, when they're out there working and hammering and you're trying to concentrate.